podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Now, you lot will probably know I'm not his biggest fan. I've been really critical of him. I thought he was brilliant.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. My name is Clayton.
And my name is James. And I nearly said my name is Suj.
In honour of Suj.
I had a couple of drinks yesterday. Hello, boss. Did he have a good game week? Do we know?
I don't know if Suj had a good game
week. Nobody had a good game week.
Yeah, looking on Twitter and Planet FPL Slack, I feel like everyone was in the trenches this week. I think expectations were quite high going into the double game week. Obviously, people going all in on Bournemouth. We'll touch on that, how that went. How did your game week go?
About as disastrously as everybody else. If Suj was here, he'd be going, good week to have a bad week. Shitty. Saved by Sonny.
Yeah.
Literally, saved by Sonny. At the moment, it's kind of a grey arrow for me.
How many points you get?
I'm on 32 minus 4.
Okay.
Of which, of my 28 net, Heung-Min Son accounts for 17 of that 28. So let's go through the roll of shame. Areola, 2 points. He's got a save tier, a save bonus against Burnley. Well done. Congratulations, wow. Mate. Alfie Doughty, 2 points. Gabriel, 1 point. He got booked as well, didn't he?
Really early. I was worried a red was coming.
I bought Milos Kerkez against my better judgment after hearing that Pedro Porro was fit on Friday. I decided still to do it. Benched Porro, took the minus 4 for Kerkez. Going well so far, swimmingly. 0-pointer, absolutely banging. Saka, 2 points. Bailey, 2 points. Bowen, 2 points. Sonny, 17. Watkins, 2 points. Haaland, 2 points. Dominic Solanke, captain.
Yeah.
For a big 0-pointer. Who would have known so much talk about Solanke? I don't know whether to call this podcast so wanky or so blanky. I haven't decided yet.
Well, we have to go with the latter one then.
Probably. Dominic, so blanky. Look, in seriousness, on Solanke particularly, he's missed the penalty, he slipped, it can happen. He's also had a goal disallowed,
correctly
by law, it's just shit law, but it hits his arm. Although I also think, as I said to you downstairs, I think he should be on minus 2 rather than 0, because I think you should get deducted a points if you assist the other team's goal as well.
Well, we'll talk about the Arsenal goalkeeper on that context.
Neto's punched the ball into his back and it's gone to Robinson at the back post and he scored. I reckon, unforced errors like Ramsdale, if you assist the opposition like Solanke, minus points. Let's make this game more fun.
So when people ask you in the summer, what should you do to improve the game? You already know your answer.
More minus points. Yeah. More shit game weeks. More crap scores. Look, everyone's kind of in it together, aren't they? And we should stress, obviously, the game week's not over. There's obviously Chelsea, Newcastle tonight. Yep. There'll be a number of Cole Palmer owners out there. Certainly a few Malagustos and stuff. And obviously Bournemouth and Luton do play again
on Wednesday. Yeah, I was just going to say, on your Kerkez decision, like, I know you've got Porro sat there, but Kerkez potentially has another game if he starts.
He starts. That's it, yeah. Oh, well, did his replacement at left-back, Dango Itara, score an assist? Yeah, maybe. I mean, Andoni Iraola did say it was a little bit down to games day, but I don't think anyone who's gone Milos Kerkez, I don't think anyone's going to be surprised if he's not in the team on Wednesday. We knew what the risk of this was rather than going for the safer Ilya Zabani pick. So, yeah, no regrets, actually. No, if I was in the same position again, I'd make the same transfers. It's the triple captain as you feel a bit sorry for.
Yeah, I feel sorry for him. Like, a missed penalty, and like you say, it's a correctly ruled out offside goal, but I think you roll that dice again and it goes differently.
But
right?
If he scores twice on Wednesday,
everyone will be happy.
He'll outscore Haaland's game week 25 triple captaincy and you're in from that perspective. So, exactly. But probably he probably needs 2 returns Wednesday now to appease what's happened so far. But you could have had the whole. You could have easily had 2 goals at the weekend, coming into another game still to go this week. It is what it is. Don't hate the outcome. It's the process. And I was very much of the opinion that those who hadn't used it, the triple captaincy, I would have been using it. So
same.
It's just unfortunate. Bloody hell, if it weren't for Sonny, crap. On what would I be on? I'd be on 11.
28, yeah.
I'd be on 11.
Mine was similar, to be fair. So I did a little bit better. So I've got 38 so far, minus 4 as well, though, so 34 points. Same keeper as you, Areola. Same defender as you, Gabriel Blank. And I also took a minus four to bring in Kirkes. So I took out the injured Senesi. And who else did I take out? My boy Gibbs White. I finally got rid of him. He's been there for a long time. And I bought in Kirkes. And I also bought in Tavernier, who hasn't really done anything yet, but it's halfway through the game week, so it's all good. But
another one, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't start Wednesday.
Yeah, and it was a risky thing. I saw Neil on Slack obviously posted his kind of opinions on who he thought would be the good assets to go with, so I was looking at that. But yeah, Sonny kind of saved my game week as well, 17 points in there. I reluctantly had to ask the Brighton Slack channel on Friday if Pascal Gross...
No. Let's get this right. So on our Patreon, we have Slack and we have a channel for each team. Clayton's gone in there just straight after they've been battered by Roma in Europa League. So about last night, lads. Gross going to play this weekend. Mate, you're killing my reputation.
The
you
game
know that.
Is the game.
Me and Suj have worked so hard for years to build the Planet FPL brand. You come in and just start offending people.
I'm adding a nice new dimension to it.
Is that what you call it?
I'm sat at 14K now. I had a benching decision between Gross or Foden. And if I knew Gross was going to start, I was always going to play him. I didn't know he was going to start, but I played him.
So which Brighton fan came back and responded to you and told you he was going to play?
This guy called James Linden at Planet FPL.
I don't support Brighton. I just said, yeah, you're playing. Just get on with it. Stop offending people.
I had to ask who I thought was going to play. Sun came in with 17 points, 8 points for Gross, and that was it. So still got Kirkes, Tavernier, and Solanke captain to go. 38 minus four, up to 14K.
So it was green arrow for you, was it?
Yeah, slight green arrow, up to 13K now.
You are ahead of all the Planet FPL correspondents at the moment in the mini league.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah, I suggest correspondents pull their fingers out. We can't be having this guy win it. Sorry. No.
It's only 1 point in it, though. Mark Southerns is a point behind, and Dan Ashby.
And I'm sure Mark's got Palmer, hasn't he? Yeah, he has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was me. Have you got Suj's team up there to see how he was?
Sorry, I have to go scroll quite far down to find Suj's team. Do give me a few minutes or so. 34, but he didn't take a hit.
Okay.
He's got Sonny. He actually didn't buy Solanke. He went with Morris.
Okay.
So he's winning at the moment. He captained Colton Morris. He's going to be down to 10. Alex Moreno did come on yesterday. Easy to forget. I was at Villa Park, by the way. 0 points for him. He's got nothing else other than Sonny. He's a little bit extra. It's because he's Captain Morris rather than Solanke. Yeah. So I think he was doing it very much with 29 in mind. And obviously, he's not got the best rank at the moment, so he wanted to go against the crowd and do something a bit different, which is fair enough. What are you doing this week? Are you free hit? Or
free hit 29.
You are?
Yeah, I've only got three or four players.
How many you got?
I have got Areola, Son, Matty Cash, and Ollie Watkins. But the wait, there's been a few. I was intending to go and free transfer and hit my way through, but then there was just a few domino effects, like going and getting people that got injured. And yeah, it's kind of forced me into it, to be honest. So free hit 29 for me. What about you? How many have you got?
I've got eight, so I won't be.
Okay.
What's interesting about it as well is the only one that I've bought who plays in 29 over the last 5 or 6 weeks is Sonny.
Okay.
He's the only one I've bought. So I've got Areola, I've got Porro, Torres, Doughty, Bailey, Bowen, Son, and Watkins.
Andy Martin will be proud.
Andy Martin will be proud. Shout out, Mr. FPL tactician. So minus four incoming for me, I think, to take me to 10. That's highly likely to be Tony and Madison, I think.
Sure.
And then wildcard 31 will be my plan because I'll be set quite well for game week 30. It'll be Solanke I'll lose. And I'm probably going to lose Saka.
Yeah.
Knowing that, because I sold him a few weeks ago, I'm not up the value that many others are.
Yeah.
So if I want to sell him for City away, the blank and City away, and then have him back on wildcard like I can.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm wildcard 30 or 31. It will depend on how my team looks, but if I'm 31, I think I'll
if you used FPL team, Clates, you'd already know, wouldn't you?
I know. I've just not had the time. Yeah.
How are you ranked so high?
I'm telling you, casual's the way to go.
I don't understand. People like you give all us content creators a bad name, I swear, man.
Do you know what it is? It's because of people like you I'm ranked so highly. I digest all the info, and And then
every year I get this. Thanks, James. You really helped me with my rank this year. Yeah, I mean, it never fucking helps my own rank though, does it?
Yeah, it's because you overanalyze it for yourself.
Actually, no. I'm doing all right. I'm sort of like 1-2-5 at the moment.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
Right, should we go through the games?
Yes, let's do that.
Saturday afternoon, 12:30, Man United 2, Everton 0. Two penalties, Bruno took one, Rashford took the other.
Yeah, do you know what? Everton were really good in the first half. Really good. Partly as well, though, that United were really bad. In the first 15, 20 minutes, United were struggling to get out of their half. So many high turnovers that Everton won back. I thought Dwight McNeil played really well in the opening sort of third of the game. He had a great chance. Even right on half time, he had a great chance that was blocked, would have made it 2-1. United got better in the second half, but I think you can reset at that point 2-0 up, and it suited them with the way they wanted to play. Doing this interesting thing at the moment with McTominay, which I know most Man United fans probably don't think is that interesting, but McTominay and Fernandes both basically playing a sort of false nines, eights, not really playing with a forward at the moment. Obviously, every chance Rasmus Højlund will be back for game week 30. And I think they'll probably push him for the FA Cup quarterfinal with Liverpool on Sunday as well. But it weren't great again. It was just another result that papered over.
A few cracks.
Yeah, for those who want to keep criticising them, it was just more armoury. Garnacho's won in the game. But also made a case that James Tarkowski played a very big role in that, and also it was Ben Godfrey on the second, but Tarkowski on the first one. What are you doing? Yeah. Such an experienced player. Standing him up in a wide area on the edge of the box, no need to dive in and make that tackle. He's obviously really good from Garnacho, and I think he's going to be a really popular one in the run-in. We know at some point there'll be a United double, and at his price, it's just ideal with 7th or 8th attacker. So he's going to be really popular in the run-in. I think subject to where that double lands, I think Højlund will very much be on radar for people. And I think the likes of Onana and Dalot might be as well. But I don't know. Yeah, I mean, he's doing fine. I don't know if anyone wants to be spending the sort of money it will cost on Fernandes or Rashford. I feel like I'm pretty sure Fernandes created the most chances in the league this year.
Really?
It doesn't feel like it.
No.
I don't see, you know, in and around that kind of price area of your Sakas, your Sons, your Fodens, your Bowens, etc., even if they've got doubles where you'll desperately want to go into them unless you're free hitting and having some of it, particularly maybe if they double in 34, people might want to look at that sort of thing. But yeah, it wasn't a great performance. It was an important 3 points. Their running's not bad, United. I do think we need to keep them on radar despite the fact that he's very much still papering over the cracks. For Everton, they've also got a really good running. Obviously, neither team playing in game week 29. They've played Beto over Calvert-Lewin in the last two now. I don't know if that's going to stick. Not that any of the fantasy listeners are probably interested in either anyway. But they do have a really good run in. As I said to you, I thought McNeil played really well, particularly in the first half. I mean, Branthwaite's going to be a popular one on the other side when people wild card. It's just at a great price that people can play it on.
It's a story for Everton though, right? Like, they create chances. They just can't put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that does sum up a lot. It was... The game on Saturday did follow a pattern that many of their home games have followed. It wasn't actually that dissimilar to actually the game at Goodison Park when Garnacho obviously scored the overhead earlier in the season. Like, Everton had plenty of chances in the first half of that game as well. So, yeah, I watched them and I always feel they're going to be all right. And there's probably more fear from Evertonians than there are from actual neutrals about their status and staying up this year. Because I think many of us think at some point this will swing and they'll score enough goals. And their running is good that I think they'll win enough games and they'll be comfortable. Even if there's a further point deduction, I'm really confident that they're going to stay up. I'm not concerned about them. Yeah.
Wow, okay, fair play.
Yeah, I'm really confident that they're going to be fine. I think if it gets to it and they need to get points on the board, they've got enough good fixtures in the running, I think they'll do it.
Sure, fair play. Sticking at the foot of the table, Sheffield United were 2-0 up against Bournemouth.
Proving that they weren't the worst team in the world.
Yeah, but...
Until Burnley got a result yesterday and now they're the worst team in the world again.
True. Yeah, 2-2 Bournemouth, Sheffield United, Solanke, obviously
I got asked this on my stream on Friday as well. I do think that they're the worst team ever in the Premier League. It's proper harsh. Like, yeah, I don't think they are. I think there's the recency of the big home defeats recently. But they've already got more points than the Derby team.
Yeah.
And there's 10 games to go.
Why do you think people go with that? Because myself, I asked the question because I can't remember that Derby team myself. So
And that's it. If you didn't see the Derby team or maybe even the really bad Sunderland team as well, then I think, yeah, you would look at that Sheffield United and go, that's as bad as I've seen in the Premier League. It is over the last sort of 6-7 years. But I wouldn't even definitively say they're worse than the Villa team that went down in 2016. They were dreadful. Yeah. So, no, I mean, they're bad. They're not great. I also have sympathy because they couldn't really invest in the squad because of the ownership issues as well. They lost. They came up. Both them and Burnley came up with weaker teams than what they got promoted with. Sheffield United lost and Dye and Berger. Burnley lost a lot of the good players who'd done really well for them last year, like Nathan Teller and Ian Mattson, who are both flying high in the Bundesliga at the moment with two very good teams. So I have sympathy with those two teams. It's a good result for Sheffield United. Chris Wilder did change the team. We knew there was going to be changes in it. Baldock back in as the right-sided centre-back, for those who still somehow own. They basically played a 3-4-1-2, what it looks like, with Gustavo Hammer behind Ollie McBurney and Ben Brereton. Diaz, they played Ben Osborne as left wing back, obviously came on really early against Arsenal last Monday as well. You're not going to be looking at them. Like, no. Game week 34, if they double the first game, is Burnley. And there's probably a lot of people sitting there right now have gone, well, if there's one thing I learned again from this week, it's don't get players from shit teams in double game weeks. Well, Sheffield United, as much as I've just defended them, are the shittest team in this league. I'd probably just be avoiding that as and when it comes around. Unless it's, your Bulldogs are great if you're free hitting, you can stick him on the bench at 3.8 or whatever he is. For Bournemouth, team was pretty much as expected. Chris Meppen did play at centre-back, despite this rumour that went round on Friday of this young lad whose name I've already forgotten, his uncle messaging to Radio 2 saying he'd be making his debut the next day, and it caused a bit of panic Friday night very briefly about if there was a Bournemouth defender who was injured. But otherwise, that was the 11 we expected. But I think, in seriousness, on Wednesday, we'll now expect some changes. Yeah. So Utara's obviously going to be knocking at the door, looking for some minutes somewhere. You've got the likes of Sinisterra, Billing. There's others as well who are going to be looking for minutes on Wednesday. I would caveat that by saying, because Bournemouth have not had a good result against Sheffield United, they won't want to lose to Luton.
Yeah.
Neil Grover spoke about this on COTC last week. It's like, well, if you have a couple of bad results here, are you suddenly looking over your shoulder? How many points clear are they of Luton, Clates?
Of Luton, they're 11. I think they're fine.
Yeah, for me, it's fine as well. But obviously, if they lose, it's 8.
Yeah.
You're not...
I think they're in the clear.
You're not totally safe.
I think if we're saying Everton are, even with a points deduction, and they're 7 above...
I mean, Everton, even if it goes wrong for them, they come back after the break, they've got Everton at home, then they've got Palace at home. You think that they'll get points and be absolutely fine. For Solanke owners, looking obviously beyond, and I guess this goes similar with the other Bournemouth assets, you're probably holding the majority going into 30, particularly Zabani as well, because you know he's going to play.
Yep.
Kerkez owners obviously
I'm
need to
now.
Be a little bit more wary of it. Part of me going for him was I wanted to play him in game week 30 as well. But I also, after yesterday, feel a little bit, despite the result they had, I feel a little bit more secure about playing Pau Torres in that game week now, considering the minutes that he played yesterday. So I think Kerkez could become a problem. I think there's every chance that what you've got might not play the second game on Wednesday. Zabani will. I'm pretty sure Solanke will.
Yep.
He's just ended up being really unlucky.
That's all it is
line.
For me. Yeah.
I think he will fall into a line, though, despite those good fixtures from game week 30 onwards, where he's the easy one to sell this week for Tony, for example. There'll be other people thinking similar to me. Watkins obviously not going, and I'd rather not lose Haaland. It's the opposite to the Saka one with me. I've got the value in Haaland.
Is that what you're looking to do, sell him on for Solanke?
Solanke to go for me, yeah. Yeah, I'm not that fussed about keeping him. There's also the longer term of, we know he is carrying a problem.
Yeah.
That's not to discount him. He's been a brilliant asset this year, but I'm not that fussed about it. I'm not like I've got to keep him for 30 and afterwards. I don't feel like that. I'm sure he will score on Wednesday, by the way.
Yeah.
You can all come for me when he doesn't. I also think it would be hilarious if he doesn't.
So would I.
Even though I captained him.
For my own team, I would like him to get a goal.
Just because it would make the points total look better, yeah?
Yeah, of course. Okay, fine. You know what? That's the thing. You know these EO discussions when people are like, oh, it doesn't matter if your captain scored. I still like seeing...
It does for the triple captains. And I get that. You still want the points.
Yeah,
I
still think it looks cool. But anyway, moving it on. From one draw to another, Crystal Palace 1, Luton 1.
I watched all of the second half of this on Saturday night. And Palace were really good.
Yeah, bits of it as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, really good. Have you seen Eze's effort?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. My goodness. The fate, he smashes, if you haven't seen it, go looking for it. He smashes his shot from the halfway line. And he hits it with like full power, but then it fades at the end.
Yeah.
Just like drops.
It looks like it was dropping in, yeah.
Kaminsky's worried it's going to, he's so close, he's worried it's going to hit the bar and come back and smash him in the face, I think. That's why he part ducks if you look back on it. Yeah, they were good Palace. They created plenty of good opportunities. Luton basically got one ball into the box, which was a flat cross from Townsend. And Corley Woodrow's got a brilliant little header on it, and it goes in literally the only place that it could go in.
So on the stats, this looked like an absolute battering. It was 2.73 XG for Palace to...
What was the second half XG? As I said, I only saw the second half.
I don't know how you check that. This is just the full game. But 21 shots to their 8.
Yeah, I mean, they were the better side comfortably. But I think it was quite refreshing because... Quite often with Palace, I think we'd expect going into the final 10, 15 minutes, be like, okay, we've got our 1-0 now. We're going to defend the box. No, they were still playing some good stuff.
Yeah.
And I think there's little things that we've seen already under Oliver Glasner that suggest that there'll be some improvements there. For Luton, obviously, it's probably more the point that people are interested in because of the double this week. The injuries defensively are still mounting up. You might have Osho and Mengi now with problems on top. They finished in a back four with basically Hashioka and Burke. That might restrict Doughty a little bit, but probably not hugely. But they've got big problems, injuries. You start listing the players they've got out, and those numbers are very much on the increase. And I factor that in my thinking about game week 30.
Yeah.
So this is nothing off of yesterday, because I said this earlier this week, but my intention at the moment would be to captain Sonny in game week 30. And after we finished recording Clash of Correspondents last week, Dan Ashby said to me that was probably his intention as well. And he's really? Our Luton okay. correspondent. So just too many problems defensively. Plus with them, they're not, they don't just sit in. Like, they're quite aggressive with the press off the ball. I don't see them just coming to Tottenham in game week 30 and just going, right, yeah, low block, what have you got? I think at stages they will try and press, and that's where teams tend to get really hurt by us. They might adjust, but I think Sonny off the back of the returns this week, City and Arsenal playing each other. Perhaps not too much confidence in Mo at the moment, having Brighton. Not started yesterday. I think Sonny would be quite popular for captaincy. Game week 30, and that's a rare one where I might even take, even though it's a home game, I probably will take Haaland on with that one and go with Sonny, I think. For the Morris owners, you're certainly holding through, obviously, this week. And then, obviously, anything else you've got, Luton, you're holding through. If he was free hitting this week, Clates, which you are,
yep.
Luton going in or not?
Yeah, I think I'll be going like Doughty. I need to look at the forward line because I feel like the forwards kind of pick themselves with Watkins.
Tony.
Watkins and Tony do, in my opinion. It's just the third one I'm unsure.
You could go five in midfield, can't you?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I'll go five in midfield or three up top. But in terms of Luton, yeah, I definitely want a bit of Doughty as a minimum. I like that fixture of home to Forest. I think it's quite good.
I think go with three defenders and go with three that have got potential attacking output this week.
Who would the other two be other than Doughty?
Well, I think you're probably looking at Pedro Porro would be one.
I thought you meant three Luton for a minute. That's what I was like, what?
Three defenders sure. who have got offensive potential. I think Doughty falls into that line. I think Pedro Porro and then... You pick him one more. I think the one that people want to go is Reguilón, but obviously don't know at this stage if he's going to be available or not. Thomas Frank suggested he probably would be.
Okay.
I think that'll probably be sort of like your template back three for three hitters. Porro, Doughty, Reguilón. I think something like that.
Would you recommend any other Luton on a free hit? Obviously, like you say, it kind of depends on if you go five in midfield or not, right?
The problem is, though, I think once you've committed to Doughty, if it were me free hitting, then I don't want any Forest defensive.
Yeah.
Because I want to go all in on it. So I think by virtue of that, I'm looking at more Luton.
Sure.
So I think for me, I'll look at this later in the week, but I think if I was free hitting, I think Morris would go in with Doughty. And I'd possibly be looking at just those two if I was free hitting. Others are going to carry more, right? So people will have Barkley. There'll be a few people carrying through Issa Kabore. Obviously, people have Kaminsky. Would I want to go like Kaminsky and Doughty? No, I don't think so, actually. So, yeah, I think if I was free hitting, probably just Doughty, Morris, and it's certainly a case to say none. Go with Forest players instead, possibly.
Interesting.
The games in 29 are not easy to call.
No,
like even I know everyone who's free hitting is probably going to go free Tottenham.
Yep.
But Fulham are decent. It's not like a gimme, not at all. The other three games, I think, are pretty difficult to call. Even Brentford at Burnley, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
People are going to go with some Brentford. But I don't think you have to do it that way. I would not be surprised if Burnley beat Brentford at the weekend.
No,
and I wouldn't be surprised if Fulham get a result against Tottenham. I think West Ham Villa's tough to call. And I think Luton against Forest is tough to call.
I think you summarise it. Every single game I look at them, I don't think I could, with confidence, back any of them.
But if it's me free hitting, I'm going all in. Now, that doesn't mean it has to be treble Luton, treble Tottenham, treble Brentford. And just one of West Ham Villa. Because I think in West Ham Villa, you could go something like Bailey, Watkins, Kudos, Bowen. Four attacking players from the fixture,
yeah,
and just not have anything defensive from it. And I think that that's the sort of thing we might end up with, because that then allows you to not think, oh, I've got to go treble Luton or I've got to go treble Brentford. If you're going four from that fixture and it's still an all-in strategy because they're all attackers.
Just want goals.
Exactly that, yeah.
Fair play. On to the next game, Wolves 2, Fulham 1.
Yeah, really shout good out, really good tomato. Result for Wolves. I was speaking to a nice lad at a bar in Birmingham yesterday. He was a Wolves fan, actually. He was talking about his season. He was saying that they were really worried in pre-season and really pleased with what Gary O'Neill's doing. More injuries in this one.
Yeah.
Neto, Bellegarde. They've ended up changing the system because there was no Craig Dawson, so they played a back four. With Santiago Bueno at centre-back. With Nico's cousin, who didn't score, Nico, but it was his
great
deflected
assist.
Effort. Yeah. For Wolves' second goal, Aitnori played more like an auxiliary left back. What they did, interestingly, I'm not suggesting anyone goes and buys this, but it's one to keep an eye on. And shout out to one of our followers, Steve Phipps, who made me aware of this. I know you could see it clearly on the highlights, but he made me aware before I'd watched any of it of Lamina's positioning after the injuries. He basically played in the front three.
Wow.
And I'm not suggesting anyone rushes into that. Like, they don't play in 29. They've got Villa away in game week 30. But it might be one to keep an eye on. Maybe. Mario Lemina, let me recommend him for fantasy. No, you're not. But it's just to make you aware, he could end up playing in a more advanced position. Tommy Doyle would obviously come into the team under that circumstance. Really good result. Gary O'Neill was pretty pleased and proud of it. And he has every right to be, because we have said a number of times... They have, and it's honest. They have been fortuitous with injuries this year. They've got a thin squad. Me and this lad were speaking about it yesterday. He's like, your squad's thin. It's like, yeah, I know, we haven't got the depth and stuff. We did on our podcast on Patreon on Thursday a piece on Wolves and their finances. Yeah. And I even said that I thought qualifying for Europe would be really dangerous for them, because they can't really go and spend, and then you're putting pressure on a thin squad run with more games. The interesting thing for Wolves might be the quarter final this weekend with all these injuries now. It's not a gimme that they'll beat Coventry.
No.
It's not a gimme.
I still think they will, but I agree. It's not as straightforward.
Of course, they're favourites. I'm just saying, don't be hugely surprised about it. All this, well, where's Bournemouth? Wolves, Bournemouth going? And, well, yeah, there might be an impact of what happens with Coventry, which I'm pretty sure that's the first quarter final Saturday lunchtime. And the projections might be changing quite quickly. I wouldn't be surprised if Coventry knock them out.
Yeah.
Actually, despite this really good result, I think as well, listening to the Wolves patrons we've got and stuff, they're very much like, Saturday's more important, get to Wembley and stuff like that. So it doubly makes it a really good result. Plus, Fulham had been in really good form. And quite interestingly, they didn't bring Paulinho back into the team.
Yeah.
Which, for advanced tiers would listen to my team news stream, that's what I'd predicted on Friday, was I just thought that it would send a really bad signal out.
As in, you thought he would come or wouldn't come
no,
back in?
No, wouldn't come back in.
Okay.
Because we've spoken so many times in the past about how much they struggle without him.
You've
found an adjustment in the system with two sixes, with Lukic and Reed, and playing Pereira a little bit more like a 10 rather than an 8. You found a solution to beat two good teams in Manchester United and Brighton, and deservedly win them both. I just felt with Paulinho that... there's every chance he'll go in the summer. What signal did it send to the other guys if he came straight back in the team?
Yeah.
I was hoping they'd win again, because I don't want Paulinho back in the team against my team this Saturday. I'd still rather play a Fulham without him, actually. And I suspect he probably will come back in, and you may get a few changes. The one that I guess people may have is Muniz.
Yeah.
And again, I think with how Tottenham play, if you want to go with like not go with a Porro and you want to go with Fulham and Tottenham offensive players, be my guest. Absolutely fine. I think the problem is there's so little to choose from defensively. I think naturally people on free hit especially will go with Porro or Udogi. Also on Muniz, can we guarantee that it will stay in the team?
I can't guarantee it, but I'd be pretty confident he will.
We think Raul Jimenez will be fit for the weekend.
Jimenez has been doing pretty well. I know he didn't return this weekend, but before that he was on fire.
Would you consider buying him at this stage?
Buying, no. I think if it's one of those, like, if you've got him, keep. Yeah, that's it, really. If you've got him, keep. I wouldn't advise kind of going in and buying. On a free hit, I'd definitely consider him, though, yeah.
Any love for going Leno on a free hit? Purely because the ceiling could be high, isn't it? Let's just say, hypothetically, Fulham won 1-0.
It's interesting you bring that up, because one of the questions I was going to ask later is keepers. Like we've said, we can't really call the games, right? I don't know where I'm going to go free hit 29 keeper.
I think people are going to go double Brentford defence on free hit.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think Flecken and Reguilón, if Reguilón's fit.
You asked the question, would I consider Leno? Not really, just because I think you guys, being Tottenham, are pretty good offensively. And I've said that before, you went and won 4-0 away from home yesterday. Look, I think you guys score.
Have you got Areola?
Yeah.
Do you think you keep him on free hit as a psychological of that?
No. If I keep him, it'll be like I've gone through the games. Like my decision making is I'll predict all the scores and then kind of pick accordingly.
So you wouldn't be influenced?
I wouldn't be.
Because quite often, I do this a lot on our Chip Talk on Patreon, where I look at free hit teams in certain weeks. And quite often, if I've got a close one, I go, I've got him, so I'd be loath to take him out.
No, I personally don't care. I'll go for and predict the scores, and whoever I think will keep a clean sheet, that will be my keeper.
Hey, do you think you'll predict anyone for a clean sheet?
Right now, no. Damage limitation, who's going to have
those saves? I think I'm probably in agreement with that, which is why I'd say probably pick the offensive guys. That might make the likes of Castagne or Anthony Robinson perhaps appeal. I did consider Robinson as an alternative one for me, because I actually fancy Fulham to win this weekend. It's worth saying, I know the Wolves fans are really proud of the result of the weekend because of the injuries they picked up. Fulham didn't half have enough efforts in the game well, if you look at the statistics.
Seen the stats on that? Should I read them
out? About 23 shots for Fulham, wasn't it?
23 shots to Wolves is 8. XG of 2.7 to Wolves is 0.83. I know you can't just do everything on stats, but if someone didn't see the game and looked at that, you think, whoa, what's going on there?
Any love for any of them Fulham offensive midfielders like Iwobi or Wilson?
On a free hit, yeah, again, I'd consider it.
Iwobi's on a little run.
He is, yeah. I thought he played well from the little I've seen of the game, to be fair. I'd consider him. Wouldn't kind of go and say our first name on the team sort of thing. I think that there's quite a few nice midfield options available on 29, in my opinion. So
I think they'll largely be overlooked. I think, again, my focus would very much, even as a buyer this week, rather than a free hitter, I'm looking at getting like a Maddison. Now there's the game week 30 on that as well, but yeah, I can't see me looking at a Fulham player this week with Sonny and Porro already on board for me, and I don't necessarily think it should be overlooked.
No, I don't think so either. I think it's just when it gets to picking the teams, there will be better options available, in my opinion.
They'll sit in. Fulham will have Tottenham. Sorry, will have a lot of the ball on Saturday. I think we can see that from Fulham's performance against Brighton recently. But look, Fulham won 3-0.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't completely rule them out. Disappointing result at the weekend, but I think they've improved quite a bit recently and they'll be fine for the rest of this season. Possibly, no, I'm not going to say it. Next game.
I feel like you have to say it.
Shit.
Not letting you off. What was that about to come out of your mouth?
I said before they won at Manchester United, I said, were we in a position with them of beginning to think that they might be on the beach?
Okay.
And then they played really well in the next two. And I was going to say, we're probably hitting a point with a club like them. They're safe. They're not going to challenge for Europe. Are they going to be on it? But the performances over the last three haven't suggested there's any let up. And I'm sure they'll give my team a good game on Saturday night.
Yeah. Fair play. Arsenal 2, Brentford 1. How was that this game?
Was you shitting yourself?
Of course I was. Yeah, bloody hell. Like, I think as an Arsenal fan, I've become accustomed to in 2024... Post-Forest, I would say, because I don't think Palace at home and Forest away were as comfortable as people seem to think. But
5-0 against Palace,
no,
you dick.
No, but I know that sounds stupid, but like until the set pieces went in, like the game was a bit different. But anyway, that was a few weeks ago. This game was tight, and Brentford came with a game plan that I knew they would come with. Like they made it really difficult for Arsenal to play, and like, I think a lot of people will go and criticise Brentford for the way they play. I have got no problem with how they approach games. Like, you have to play to your strengths when you're playing against one of the best teams in the league. And like, it is what it is. You have to find ways to adapt to it. I thought what they did was brave as well in terms of keeping Tony and Vissa. Like, did you watch the game?
Yeah.
Okay, so in terms of keeping Tony and Vissa high up, like very direct, that's ballsy. Not every team does
that's
that.
How they normally play, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think when teams come to Arsenal now, they tend to kind of revert to type. You see all 11 behind the ball. I respected it. I thought it was good. And I thought when they put it into the channels, Vissa ran it really well. I thought Tony's hold-up play was fantastic. Gave both Saliba and Gabriel a good battle. And they made it really hard for Arsenal to play. I don't think Arsenal really controlled the game as I would have hoped and most people would have thought.
Is that because of them, the opponent?
I think it was a combination of both them making it difficult in certain areas for Arsenal to play. And I think I said on the Arsenal pod I do with Nima, I don't think certain key players turned up in Odegaard and Saka. I didn't particularly think had their best game. I think Brentford would doubled, tripled up, made it quite difficult for Arsenal to manipulate space in the areas they usually do. But I think sometimes teams can just struggle to click, and it's one of those where not every game is going to be a 4-1, 5-0, 6-0. Sometimes you do have to kind of... It's a cliche that I hate, but it's a cliche for a reason. You have to sometimes find a way to get the result.
It amuses me all the time when Brentford frustrate an opponent. Oh, they do my head in.
That's
I just think
saying, it
you've got
do my
to
head in.
You've got to mentally prepare yourself for a team like Brentford. We had a similar circumstance with it. Even worse, they went in front against us, right? And we have to overturn the game in the second half. Sudge always speaks about the frustrations with them. I think there's almost like a quiet admiration for them, because you know, like, unless you get a couple early, what the game is gonna be like. And actually, the game had just hit a point where I began to think you might not score here. It just hit that point.
That's really interesting, because I was shitting it, but I think maybe this is the fan bias, which is why it's interesting. I felt pretty confident a goal would come, just because I thought Arsenal were quite disappointing in the first half in terms of there wasn't enough sustained control for me. And then obviously Ramsdale... What was he doing? It's a shame, because as a fan, like, you want him to do well. He's obviously going to be going in the summer, but...
Is he obviously going to be going? Do we know that?
Fair comment. I think Arsenal will be looking to offload him. Whether there'll be a suitable buyer, not sure. But Arsenal going into half-time, I'm thinking, okay, yeah, this hasn't been a great half. Go in 1-0, come out second half, deal with it, and then Ramsdale gets Brentford back in the game. But the reason I felt confident was second half. I feel like the fans kind of needed that rocket up the bum. And the fans got... I feel like the fans played a big part in being that 12th man on Saturday in the second half. First half, I thought, was disappointing. And the way Arsenal came out with intent in the second half, it felt wave after wave after wave. And for me, there was an inevitability around the goal coming. Obviously, Rice hit the bar from outside of the box. I personally felt like it was coming, but I was shitting myself, because in my head, I'm thinking...
Keeper weren't making saves all over the shop, though,
no,
mate, at all.
When I say that, it wasn't a case of...
He don't save much, so I know that.
It wasn't creating high-quality chances. It was more, we were playing in areas where I just felt like... You know, we always said Liverpool teams of the past, they would just overwhelm you.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I had. Like, sure, there wasn't clear-cut, high-quality chances, but I just felt with, like, the areas we were playing within sustained periods, it was coming. Got the job done in the end, but... Yeah, from a fantasy perspective, Havertz has obviously got another return. Rice is chipping in.
Do you think he stays there now, Havertz?
So I get this.
Is that first choice nine now? And I think when we say first choice, we should define that by saying not nailed, but, you know, going to play the majority, let's say.
Majority, I would say yes. I still believe there will be certain games where Arteta looks at a certain opponent and thinks that's suitable for Jesus to play there. That game suitable for Trossard to play there. Do I think Havertz will play the majority up top? Yes. Do I think he'll play every game up top? No.
Can you define a little bit what that looks like? Like, I don't know, if you're playing like City away, do you want someone more like Jesus? Or
I would say the opposite. If City away Havertz? Right now, I think Havertz is someone that you want someone up there that can pin him, run the channels. And I think Jesus is more for a team where we're expecting like a really deep low block where you need some unpredictability in there, like close control. I look at the games where Arsenal played Burnley and West Ham, Trossard started up top, right? And I think stylistically as a profile, he's more similar to Jesus. Whereas you look at your Newcastle games, Brentford, and it's a Havertz. And I think you're starting to see some trends in terms of what type of opposition Arteta opts for. In terms of who he goes up top.
I suppose with Havertz, it's worth adding on as well, saying he doesn't have to be the nine, right?
Yeah,
can obviously play as
he arrives from
as one of the eights, yep. right? So, yeah, it might be one to keep an eye on. He's obviously in good form. Is that like four in a row he's scored in?
Yep.
I want to say maybe. Sure. Do you think if you were wild carding after the blank, do you think you'd be going three Arsenal?
Not three. If I was wild carding in 30.
Let's say 31 because okay. after the City game.
31, I think I would go three, yeah. 30, I don't think I would go three.
Name the three. Is it Saka, Gabriel and what?
For me, it's still double Arsenal defence and one in Saka.
Is that now White rather than Saliba?
I would still go Saliba. I know White's doing really well with his attacking returns. And in my opinion, I've seen nothing different in him from offensive potential.
Is that right? Have we not seen a little bit of an adjustment recently since Kivior's been playing at left back?
Yeah, I've said that before.
He's getting in more advanced positions, whether that's centrally or on the outside, as seen with the second goal at the weekend.
So offensively, no. He's been doing that for me all season. The only difference for me is, like you say, because of Kivior on the left, he's inverting into central areas more often in possession. Do I think that has a knock-on impact on his ability to get points? No. But that's why I say I've not seen much different in terms of like his overlaps. He's been doing that all season. Underlaps in the half space, he's doing that. I think it's just now people are seeing the output come with assists. I still think Arsenal's ability to score from set pieces makes me still want to go Saliba, Gabriel, because you look at them from set pieces and the way Arsenal attack them, and I think there'll still be a couple more goals end of the season from that route.
Gabriel's obviously the target from a lot of the set plays. I think we saw that again at the weekend with the one that was cleared off the line in the second half. But White goes in the box for them as well. Am I right in saying that?
He does, yeah. Yeah. But you're right. Like, in terms of who they aim for, it's always Gabriel and Saliba's head.
Them near post ones were an absolute nightmare. Yeah. If he's got the run at that front post, it's very, very difficult to defend. Yeah, I still think Gabriel would be the first choice for me. But I think Ben White might be very much putting his hand up now as an alternative rather than just Gabriel Saliba. I don't know. Tom Cantle, from who got the assist, has had him for ages and delighted with the returns at the weekend. It's only basically White and Garnacho were the only two players that returned for anybody, I think, on Saturday. So, well done to Tom. I'd be keeping an eye on Ben White.
And anything on Brentford? Tony's effort? Oh, my God. What would have been better, that one or Eze's, if it went in? Tony's half volley. Almost lobbed Ramsdale.
I think Tony's an extraordinary effort because it's with his left foot as well.
That was unbelievable. Extraordinary. I thought it was going in.
You try and do that with your bad peg, honestly. But I feel like I could lucky hit that more than Eze's fade was just gorgeous. And you should acknowledge that Ramsdale could have easily got beat on that. And did redeem himself somewhat.
Yeah,
I think an interesting one that might get a little bit more attention towards the weekend is Vissa, who's obviously scored. He's now started the last couple over Morpay. And Bumo, by the way, we think he's extremely unlikely to be involved for anyone who got excited about training vids last week. The target does appear very much after the international break. And with respect to Burnley, do they need to force him for Burnley away when you've got a two-week break afterwards? He's probably getting right for Manchester United in game week 30. So Vissa, we think, plays again. And I have noticed a little bit of a theme moving into the weekend of people looking at him more anyway because of affordability. So what I mean by that is, take me, this would be an example. I'm probably taking a -4 anyway because I think I'm getting two attacking players for two players who are blanking, -4 worth it if it's two attacking players. Tony Maddison feels like for two blankers, -4 worth it. And Tony may even get the armband possibly. But if I was in a position where I didn't want to do that and just wanted to make one, say I had two threes, for example, I can't go Solanke to Tony without making the second transfer.
Yeah.
So it's when I go Saka to Maddison, it opens it up. I can't just go Tony. And there'll be people in that position who have gone, oh, actually, I can't go Solanke to Tony. Should I just go Vissa? Yeah. And he's obviously scored in the last two, and Tony hasn't.
Yeah. I would still go Tony, but that's a really good point. Not everyone... I don't know. I don't think budget will be that much of an issue for people.
Who do you think will be most captain? I think there'll be a massive surge for Sonny after yesterday.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because of yesterday, and he returned the week before, I think it'll be Son anyway, to be honest.
Yeah, I think so. But I think most people had... I'd been planning it for weeks that it would be Tony probably now because of the fixture. Watkins EO will probably be over 100 as well because there'll be enough will go with him. But I think the real surge for captaincy will probably be for Sonny now after...
I think that's the split, though, those three.
After Yesti, OOP through the middle. He will play that position again. I've been saying this the last couple of weeks. Even if Richarlison does get back fit for it, he'll be a sub.
Yeah.
I think if it was free hitting, Tony's got to go in. I think Reguilón will, despite obviously not playing at the weekend, Frank has suggested it'll probably be available. If he is, that's going to be the popular one. You can obviously go with something behind that. So a sensible idea might be to go with perhaps Roslev and Reguilón and have Roslev on the bench. Because I think if Reguilón doesn't play, Roslev definitely does. And I know they play on different sides, so it's not completely direct to each other. But I do have a little bit of concern with, say, Roslev, that he can move Lewis Potter from left wing back to right wing back. Or he could even decide, right, I want to shove the system and go with a back four and play Lewis Potter and Vissa in a front three either side of Tony. And I'm a bit nervous about the centre-backs with Brentford as well. Zanka, Ajet and Collins, by default, should all play at the moment.
Yeah.
But he's not feeling me with any joy out. And Nathan Collins looks so uncomfortable as left-sided centre-back. Really uncomfortable. And obviously, Pinnock is not going to be available in time. Ben Mee, we know, is going to miss the rest of the season. So that probably sticks. But actually, ironically, I'm quite nervous about all them Brentford defensive players in terms of the minutes at the weekend. I couldn't say to you with certainty, if you said to me, that back three, Zanka, Ajet, Collins, who definitely plays?
I'd say Asia.
I'm not sure.
I think both him and Zanka, to be fair, I'd be fairly confident.
Like if they went to a back four, which I don't think they did... But if they did, who definitely plays? I'm not certain under that circumstance.
I'd be confident in... How do you pronounce his name?
Christopher Ajet, yeah.
Ajet. Yeah, I'd be confident in him personally.
It's probable, but I think that's probably also avoidable. There is a little story there with Collins, obviously, was at Burnley, but I think, therefore, Flecken and Reguilón would be the two popular ones.
He scored as well, obviously. Collins with that header, good save as well from Ramsdale.
Yeah, I mean, if he could have got it more to the right, Ramsdale wouldn't have had a chance. I think there's no need to look at Lewis Potter because he's so cheap. It may be one for people buying through, but I don't think it's necessary. So I think you really are kind of blocking into Flecken, Reguilón, Vissa, Tony is probably what you're looking at from Brentford. Would you consider going Vissa and Tony?
Yes, but I just think because of Watkins... to be honest, I was going to say Watkins and then others, but I was thinking, who else is there that really shoehorns themselves?
Morris, Awoniyi.
Yeah, but like shoehorn? I don't know. I would consider it, yeah.
Every free hit team this week's got Tony and Watkins, isn't it?
Yeah. So then it's like, who's the third? I don't hate it.
But it doesn't have to be, does it? You can easily go Son, Madison, Kudos, Bowen, Bailey, couldn't you?
Bang, I hadn't considered it until you just said it, and I don't hate it. Just one quick one before we move on, because I feel like I'll get slated if I don't bring it up.
I'm going to spend 40 minutes talking about Tottenham.
Yeah, of course. Havertz, lucky to be on the pitch.
Okay, I wasn't going to bring it up, but since you did.
So for what it's worth, I think he's lucky to be on the pitch. I think it's a dive.
What do you mean you think it's a dive? It's definitely a dive, mate.
Okay, but football's subjective. I've seen some neutrals say
Here's the annoyance, and I'll give the Tottenham example because it's the one I obviously remember. Bissouma got sent off. For a similar incident, second yellow card, and he's an idiot. He's an idiot. He nearly cost the team the game that day, and it was in complete control. And there wasn't, it's disgraceful that the referee sent him off. There was quite a bit of condemnation from Tottenham fans, like, you've put your mates and us in trouble here, like, it's not on. What I really hate with the diving, I think this is where Tottenham fans with that particular incident, and I'm sure there's loads of others that other teams can think of and mention, is it's like it's the consistency, right? Yeah. So Bissouma gets booked for it, and rightfully so. But there's no reason really for a referee in that circumstance to book Havertz. Now, the one difference between the Bissouma and the Havertz ones is the Bissouma was outside the box.
Yeah.
With the Havertz one, if he's not sure, don't need to do anything because he knows he get told in his ear, I actually has contact, penalty. But what he won't get told in his ear is he's dived.
Yeah.
And it really bothers me that we have a tool like VAR that can't just get in his ear and go, yeah, mate, book that fella, he's dived.
Yeah.
The diving is something that can be looked at retrospectively and punished. It doesn't even matter if it's a minute later where they go, he's dived there, book him. Yeah. Do I have a huge problem with the fact he wasn't sent off? No, because there's other examples of similar things this year. Is he lucky?
I think he is, yeah.
Well, yeah, because let's put it this way. If the referee gives him a second yellow and sends him off, you ain't complaining about it.
No. I agree.
There isn't anything to complain about under that circumstance.
I felt like it would... Yeah, we had to bring it up.
Yeah, it annoys me that VAR is not being used for it. Because we've got such an easy fix to get diving out of football here. Use it.
Just quickly before we move on, yes or no answers. Did you think Trossard and or Gabriel should have had penalties?
I can't remember the incidents. I'm not even bullshitting.
Fair enough. I didn't think Trossard... They were both pulled down. I don't think Trossard's was a pen.
Oh, Trossard ran the neck.
Yeah. I think that was soft.
Yeah, I think they both could... Yeah, I remember the other one as well. They both could have been, yeah. Again, it wouldn't have been no complaints if they'd have been...
I think the Gabriel one was more likely than Trossard. But
what they're doing at the moment, they're measuring... Say, like, with that Trossard one, what they're doing, I think, is they're measuring whether he would have got the ball.
Yeah.
And they're measuring that game. Goalkeeper's coming. The chances are the goalkeeper's going to get it. I'm not saying that's, like, the right answer, but I think that's what they're doing with their decisions at the moment.
Fair play. Super Sunday... Aston Villa 0, Tottenham 4. I don't think many people would have predicted this. You were there. You got your minstrels on your way home.
Tom was already at home. It was part of the Uber Eats order.
I feel like you need to tell people what that's about for anyone that's not seen your tweet.
Just look at my Twitter timeline. I ordered some food for me and the wife, and I ordered some minstrels as well, which, by the way, I didn't eat. It's still sitting in the cupboard. Great day, obviously. Let's talk about Villa first. I've always preferred to talk about the other team first because otherwise I'll just talk about my team too much. I think we can be hindsighty here and say Villa shouldn't have changed the system. I think there's positives, negatives to it. And as usual, you can spin your narratives. So I've spoken plenty of times about Tottenham struggling against back fives, making it it becoming more difficult to create chances. I think you've seen that in the first half. What was our XG at half-time? 0.02 or something?
Was it really? Oh.
So, in terms of the back five, I mean, we had a lot of the ball. We had 70% of the ball in the first half.
Yeah.
So, in terms of Villa limiting us to create chances, the back five worked. If you reflect on the game at White Hart Lane earlier in the season, which came quite quickly after the Chelsea game where we lost loads of people because of injuries and stuff, we battered them for the opening half hour. And it was ridiculous that we weren't a few goals in front. Then our players tired, Villa got a goal back, and then by the end of the game, Villa managed it really well in the second half. But I think the big thing for me was, and I've got the benefit of this, of the experience of being in the stadium, and I was in May last year at Villa Park as well, when it was kind of like a Conference League playoff, if you will. The atmosphere that day in May was exceptional. They were great. They were so up for it, Villa. Brilliant atmosphere. It's probably Villa Forest were probably the two best away atmospheres I experienced last season. That was pony yesterday in terms of the atmosphere. I remember it's a 0-0 for a long time, right? It's 0-0 at half time. The atmosphere was shit. And I think the atmosphere was shit because of the way that Villa played.
Okay.
It was difficult for them to... I've spoken about this with Tottenham in the past, with back fives and you cede possession. You're not giving the fans anything
no
to...
burst in any moment to get adrenaline going. Yeah.
It was... I know what the tactic was. They knew that they could isolate 2v2, Bailey and Watkins against Romero and Van de Ven. Now, Bailey wasn't going to do Van de Ven, but there were a couple of little glimpses where Watkins, if he could isolate Romero, there was one time he did him, Van de Ven made it bad. There was another he got away from Romero and then Romero got back to him. We're brave with the way we play and we'll do that, right? So I know there was a definite strategy there, but that was the only thing that Villa had, was that as an outball. I think it must have been frustrating for their fans to watch that. Also, probably going into the game thinking they probably would have taken a draw because they were 5 points clear of us. So I think, for me, they lost the advantage of what they had in the game, which was home advantage and the crowd. The crowd. It should have felt like a cup quarterfinal atmosphere, and it didn't. It just felt like, from an atmosphere perspective, just like a bog standard. And I think if Unai Emery could have his time back, I think
he would
play a back four. Because what I wondered on the way home last night, and I got why he did it, but I also reflected on it, why didn't he play a back five against Arsenal or City when they had them two brilliant results in December, wasn't it?
Yeah, December, I think it was.
I mean, against City, they just swarmed them.
Yeah.
You could feel the atmosphere coming through the TV that night.
Do you think there's an element of the time of day, though? Because, like, evening games versus Sunday, 1 o'clock. Like, I definitely feel it as a fan when it's an 8 o'clock game. I'm usually a bit more leery.
Yeah,
I
agree with
on
that.
Sunday afternoon.
The earlier kickoff doesn't help the atmosphere perspective. Definitely. It doesn't. 1 o'clock is too early, really. But you also think it was a very big game. And I'm not criticising Villa fans here, by the way, because like I said, the atmosphere when I went there in May was great. But this was bigger game than the game in May.
Yeah.
This is, if Villa won yesterday, it was over.
I wouldn't say over, but yeah.
Near enough.
Yeah.
All right, put it this way, at least top five.
Yeah.
No way finishing lower than, they would have killed the prospects of Manchester United and others finishing fourth if they'd won. Now.
It's still open.
It's open.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think from the FPL perspective, look, most are going to go Watkins this week. He's probably the boring captain pick because of the EO.
Yeah.
But I do think there'll be a surge for Sonny from captain. So I think I'd probably avoid defensively. I think John McGinn's red card.
That was bad.
Coward.
Yeah, intending to hurt there.
Suj says, tell a man what you're telling to his face. Cowards. And I love that it's a red card. I actually punched a guy in front of me in the back of my head when it happened, genuinely.
Did you apologise?
Yes, I did. I didn't punch him in the back of the head. It was one of them where it was...
James channeling Anthony Joshua.
It did piss me off. Because you know one of your players has just been hacked.
Yeah.
It's not a... He's just hacked
it's
him.
The
he's
intent.
Just he's just
it's
kicked
the intent
him.
Behind it.
And I lifted my arms and I clocked this geezer in the back of the head and I did grab him and cuddle him and say sorry. He wasn't happy, but he was all right. I spoke about this with a Philip Billing one a few weeks ago when he got sent off. Those acts that are deliberate and dangerous should be red cards.
Yep.
For me, it is a definite attempt to commit a foul. Is no attempt to get the ball, and he's used excessive force.
Yep.
It's not a deliberate shirt pull or a deliberate trip. It's a deliberate, I'm going to kick you up in the air, mate.
I want to hurt you.
Punish that, red card. And it stops other people doing it.
Yeah.
Agreed. So I'm in full agreement with that being a red card. I don't think the Aston Villa fans were. Also, don't really care.
Really?
They were chanting his name after the tackle. Like, oh, our hero, Super John McGinn. And it stopped when the colour of the card came out. When I saw it live, I thought straight away it was a red card.
I think
card.
A lot of Villa fans, once they see the replay, would change their tune, to be fair. It's different when you're in the stadium.
Interestingly, Udogi wasn't getting booked afterwards.
Say that again?
He wasn't getting booked afterwards. Booed. Oh. He wasn't getting booed afterwards, Udogi.
Okay.
You know, like, people get picked on it. Oh, my player's been sent off, and just because you were the guy that was fouled, I'm going to boo you.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't booing him, actually. So, he's a miss for them, though.
Big time.
And I presume that's a free game ban.
It would be.
Fault. It's got to be.
Yeah.
Which should include missing a game at Manchester City.
So that would be game West week 31. Ham, Wolves and Man City.
Mm. Tim Rogbenham's a really good young player. He played in midfield with Carney Chukwuemeka, also formerly of Villa, for the under-19 team that won the Euros a few years ago. He'll be fine as cover, but McGinn is an important player for them. And will be a miss. I wonder if that might put the brakes on Douglas Luiz a little bit more as well, possibly. I think if I was free hitting this week, I'd probably go Watkins, Bailey, and I think I'd probably go Bowen Kudos on that fixture, and I'd just go
just
with defensive
go for the
players.
Yep.
Yeah, I think so.
Desmond Tutu kind of game.
I think so. I think Villa will go back to a back four. I think Alex Moreno owners are possibly out of luck. Dean obviously played last Thursday in Europe, came into the team yesterday. He might be first choice now. I think Pau Torres owners like me have possibly got a bit lucky, where I think his importance for me is clear. And if they go back to a back four, as long as he's fit, he's ahead of Longley. Definitely. He was a player I obviously know really well. I think if I was to go a Villa defensive one this week on free hit, I'd go for Konsa.
Okay.
That's the safest one. It also offers a little bit of a threat from set plays. But I would think, like, even, oh, Matty Cash. Yeah, you dickhead as well, by the way. You could play Konsa right back. And you could go Longley, Torres. Diogo Carlos is back fit. Konsa will definitely play.
Yeah.
Only one I'd be really confident definitely plays.
There will be Moreno owners out there. Would you advise sell?
No, you can't, can you?
Dina did get hooked earlier.
No,
right?
You get the one-pointer.
Yeah.
You get the one-pointer, so you're gonna leave it, aren't you? Rather than... You're not going to transfer anyone out who's got the fixture this week, unless they are definitively injured, I think. So if you're carrying Richarlison and Ange says on Friday, yeah, Richarlison's definitely not back, fine, sell if that's what you want to do. But I think even if you've got Issa Kabore would be another sort of example. Take your 1 point this week.
Yeah.
Whether he starts or not is probably what it'll be, right? So you're not moving it on. But I don't think you'd be investing in Villa defensively. I think Bailey would be the one if people want to invest in new for Villa in terms of buying. I'm going to guess a lot of the guys have already got Watkins. If you haven't, you'll want it this week. For my team, good display. Spoke about this on Patreon last week, actually, about with Tottenham reflecting on the Palace game and being this halfway house between the play being too slow and also trying to trust them that they're good enough, that they'll get there. There were a couple of surprises in the team lineup. I was surprised that Pap Sarr played because he's been carrying a little bit of a problem. He was great.
What a bloody ball from Madison's goal.
And the cross for the first goal. I was on that side, and I'm not going to lie to anybody, when he crossed it, I went, no. Literally what came out of my mouth was no. And then the next word that came out of my mouth was goal. Because I assumed that the world-class Emi Martinez was going to get to that cross, but stayed a little bit rooted to his spot. It was a very untypical James Maddison goal.
Yeah, it was.
It's not the sort of one you expect to score, but delighted that he scored that sort of goal and getting into the box. We have a problem with that, players getting into the box. It's normally only the wide players do it quite well, so it's actually a really nice goal for us to see. And there was a little bit of surprise as well with Brennan Johnson playing instead of Werner. Now, you lot will probably know I'm not his biggest fan. I've been really critical of him. I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah.
He was so good, Brennan Johnson. Yeah. And again, reflecting on conversation we had about him last week about...
For himself.
Yeah. Something happened in that Palace game. We got in a bit of a battle with Munoz late in the game and he looked after himself. And I don't know if it was a light bulb moment for him, you know. I thought it was great. He was so positive in everything that he was doing. And again, when he's had the one big moment for the finish... It's a good finish.
Taking it.
He's the one now, I think, that would perhaps, of you know, people looking for a real differential this week, that's now on the table.
Okay.
I think.
Think he keeps his place then, yeah, even if Richarlison...
I don't see me personally picking him over Maddison because I think the circumstance could change by game week 30. And whichever Tottenham player I get, I need it.
Yeah.
And it could be that something changes this weekend and Werner goes back in or Richarlison's back fit and Richarlison goes in. I cannot believe at this moment, after his performance yesterday, despite the fact Werner came on and scored, I don't believe that Johnson won't play.
Sure.
I'm pretty confident. He certainly deserved to play after that performance. And I think because there's been some criticism of him, he's had a couple of good displays now, so keep him in. Keep him in for the minute. If he then needs to take him back out again in a couple of weeks, take him out. That's the real wild card one now, because I think a lot of people like me will do the obvious and go and buy Maddison.
Yep.
If I was free hitting, I'd consider Johnson. I'm not saying I'd go Johnson over Maddison, but it would be way more in my train of thinking.
Okay.
I think that's probably the best three is Maddison, Johnson and Son.
Just go triple midfield,
but
yeah.
The problem is, as already summarised, if you're free hitting this week, all the defensive assets are pretty shit. So by default, I think you end up with someone like Porro.
Yeah.
Because if you don't go Porro, what you end up going Konsa instead or something. Like, it doesn't... I think most free hitters end up with Porro or even Udogie rather than triple Tottenham attack. It is still triple Tottenham attack, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
So I don't mind that if people want to go and get Johnson, particularly on free hit. I thought it was absolutely great. It took us a while to get round this, the way they were playing. They obviously went very defensive with the 5-3-2, but obviously went quite man-to-man. So Tielemans and McGinn played either side of Luiz, who just couldn't get forward in this system, by the way. And I think the system will change again, it's worth saying. That was to deal with how much Tottenham want to get fullbacks into these half-space areas. They just sat behind it and were a bit flat. It took us a while to figure out. Obviously, the first goal changes the game. And then we get the press right on the second goal. And from there, it's comfy as. We were very good. Very good and very efficient and ruthless in the second half as well. It's an absolutely super result against a good team, right? We've all lauded Villa as being really good this season. I think, as said, in hindsight, the manager will probably regret the lineup a little bit because I think the biggest thing is they lost their advantage of playing at home. Sonny, yeah, probably captain, I think, at the weekend. It's this, isn't it? It's his capability.
Yeah, it's the ceiling.
I don't think he had a great game yesterday. But his capability in terms of his finishing, I think even on the second goal for Johnson, I think he waits too long on the pass. So we get, they get it right and he scores. I don't want to be too critical.
I only thought he was going to go Kulusevski.
It took
on the
too
right.
long, yeah. It took too long. It sounds stupid. It took too long. We scored. I still think the pass should have been released a little bit earlier. But I don't know. Maybe it left the goalkeeper not able to commit as quickly because he could have gone left or right. Yeah, it's his capability. If I said to you now, Watkins or Son was going to get a hat-trick at the weekend, who would you say was more likely?
Son.
Yeah, I think that's probably why it'll be the popular captain choice. You know the Hall capability is there.
Yep.
And I must stress, I do think that's a tough game for us on Saturday.
I do as well.
But I think Sonny, I think when I keep getting asked about is, and I thought Udogie was brilliant in that second half yesterday, is Udogie now worth the saving over Porro if people are buying in that area? There's a case, yeah. There's a case. He's running in between in the half spaces is a little bit more direct than Pedro, but Pedro has more armoury to his returns in terms of his crossing ability. You will never see Destiny Udogie cross the ball. I've never seen it. What I mean by that is it's probably not defined correctly because he'll hit the byline and he'll cross it low across the box. What I'm saying is you will never see him on the touchline and go, I'm going to whip it in like Trent or Pedro Porro.
Yeah.
Literally. Never. You've sure. never seen him cross the ball like that. I don't know if I ever will. It's just not in his style or in his makeup to do anything with air and directness. So you very much are relying on him more to get into the positions, whereas Porro could put Sonny over the top from 50, 60 yards away, right? So, but yeah, I think there's a case to say Udogie's worth the saving. Mickey van der Ven injured. We don't know the extent at this stage. Radu Dragosin did well when he came on yesterday.
Oh, got his wish.
But yes, he did get his wish. He got a lot of wishes yesterday. But losing Mickey is concerning.
Yeah.
You can't replicate that sheer awesome pace of recovery that he has.
Yeah.
And the game did become easy for Dragosin because of the red card and the fact we got a couple of gold lead. He'll be fine. He's cheap as, and he might be one where if Van der Ven is a long-term injury, he might even be a really cheap investment for people. He's 4.2, yeah. If Van der Ven was out, say, for the rest of the season, he'll play.
Would you recommend going there instead of 0.7 more for Udogie?
Probably not, but if it's circumstantial where you're struggling for the money, I don't mind it.
Sure.
I tell you what I would say about him, for those who are unfamiliar, is unit. I would bet you
set
that...
Okay. Yeah,
I think it could be. And with us as well, we don't have huge aerial targets on set plays. He would be, I think, like our Gabriel, if you will, at corners. He would become the target, I think.
Fair play. Moving it on, Brighton 1, Nottingham Forest 0. My boy Pascal Gross.
He played, well done.
But the reason I wanted him is I feel like whenever he plays, he's always like in the bonus. I feel like he's always capable of like...
Did he have bonus with the assist? He must have.
I'm sure he did, yeah.
He must have.
Got me 8 points.
Eight?
Yeah.
Yeah, no surprise. His pass completion doesn't give it away or anything.
Good win for Brighton after obviously losing.
And we're very happy about it. Not for the first time against Nottingham Forest this season either. We're very, very pleased with the victory. I guess it obviously lost a few in a row. They obviously took a slap in Thursday night.
Yeah.
And for those who missed it on my stream on Friday, the consequence of Brighton losing to Roma so heavily, we obviously expect them to go out now, is the Brighton-Chelsea game is now more likely to be a extra fixture rather than Chelsea against Tottenham later in the season. As per the projections on FPL team, I've currently projected game week 35 for Brighton-Chelsea. Why game week 35 rather than game week 36 is what you were previously projecting for Chelsea-Tottenham? Well, it's quite simple. In 3 days, we find out that Brighton are out of Europe and there's more time. And that means you've not... Brighton and Chelsea will both end up with two games in hand over certain teams.
Yep.
Like, keep that period as short as possible. Game week 33 is probably unavailable because Chelsea play on the Monday night. Otherwise, I'd have probably projected game week 33. I don't think it'll be 32, but it's not impossible if they were quick about it. So just bear that in mind. I think the FPL headline in terms of the weekend here is our old mate Purvis, isn't it?
Yeah.
Felt like every other question on my deadline stream was, shall I sell Estupinan for -4? And I'm sitting there, I'm going, I think he plays, you know. I think he plays. It didn't start last night. I think he plays. But also knowing, yeah, you've got your excuse here.
Yeah.
What I would say in terms of excuses of moving on your Brighton assets, obviously, if you're not free hitting this week, you've got the blank is now a very good excuse. And I've got Liverpool away in game week 13. But James, they might double in game week 32. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's unlikely, but it's possible. The thing is, though, with a Brighton player and a double, who are you getting playing twice?
Yeah, it's a lottery, isn't it?
Is it even a double?
No, I think it's a 1.5.
Dunk, Gross.
Even Gross, though, he didn't play the last game, right?
So he will play the majority of them, though. I presume they're going to be out of Europe, right? Yeah. So in seriousness, Gross probably does play the rest of the season. With his Stupinam, we don't really know where we're at. He's obviously played yesterday, but Tarik Lamptey hasn't started. There's others they can use in wider areas moving forward, like Igor Julio has not played yesterday. So I think other than Gross or Dunk, because you really need to hold that specifically for players later in the season, I think that's just to forget them now.
Yeah, for Forest, next game's huge.
Yeah, and I think their lineup will have put a lot of people off in terms of free hitters for 29, seeing no Elanga or Hudson-Odoi in that starting lineup. I don't think you'd go near any defensively. The goal they conceded is ugly. It's come off the back of me praising Matt Sells last week. Doesn't look good on that at all. I would think that Elanga and Hudson-Odoi will come back in the team away to Luton, but I wouldn't be certain of it. And I think the same for Aaron Yee, obviously, to add to that as well.
Why do you think he changed that? Like, do you think that was something tactical for Brighton?
Possibly, in terms of it's a more defensive structure, but I would have thought that Aaron Yee would be way more useful than Wood in terms of on your turnovers and stuff. And Wood very nearly scored himself, actually. It means now, though, that the only one that you could have... Oh, mate, the fly's back. I can hear it. It's a Monday. He's back. For the advanced tier patrons, by the way, make sure you listen to the 5 minutes added on the Queen Bee last week. Gibbs White, you've just sold.
Yeah.
He's probably the one, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I like him as an asset. I think he's 90 minutes most week on pens. It's just, that's all I can ask.
Is he on pens?
Fair point. I thought he was, but I still think he would be, yeah. I think it's like 100%, but...
I wonder if Wood would take the penalties instead, maybe.
Don't know. Honest answer.
If you want a defensive one, I think our old friend Baby Trent, Nico Williams, would probably be the way to go. He's got himself a nice run in the team at the moment. I noted that Forest fans voted for him their player of the month for the last month as well. So I think he stays in at right back at the moment. It's one that falls into the category of could you have an offensive fullback? I guess Harry Toffolo falls into that line as well. I presume Nuno Tavares is probably going to be injured at the moment. But if either Tavares or Aina would back, that would make me quite concerned about Toffolo. Whereas I think if it's just for this week, I think Nico Williams will play again.
Yeah.
So if you did want to go Forest defensive, probably most of you don't. It would probably be Nico Williams would be the way I'd go. I would still be quite keen, I think, to go Elanga if I wanted to go a Forest attacker. But that team lineup yesterday is really off-putting.
Yeah, a bit, yeah.
It's really off-putting. Elanga's obviously come on for the last half hour. Hudson-Odoi on for the last 20. Same with Aaron Yee. Yeah, I don't know the logic behind some of that selection. I think because it's Luton, he'll pick a bigger team. So for Aaron Yee particularly, Aaron Yee's obviously a unit. So is Wood.
Yeah.
Wood's someone who's really good in terms of defending set pieces, actually. Yeah. Could it be Wood again?
I don't know.
We're crossing Aaron Yee off here, I think.
Yeah, I think there's too much uncertainty to go for it. I think Aaron Yee might come back in, but I can't say with.
And Origi's now started the last two on the right.
Yeah.
Does that stick?
Again, I don't know. Possibly. But
see, it's Gibbs White, isn't it? Yeah. It's Gibbs White or Elanga.
100%. Yeah, but that's a big three for Forest now. Luton away, Palace home, Fulham home.
It is, and then it gets more difficult afterwards. So, pressure, yeah. My instinct, by the way, is that they'll win at Luton.
Yeah? That would be big for them. That's huge in the relegation battle.
I just think Luton have got too many defensive problems at the moment. And I think Forest are quite equipped with actually, under Nuno Ball, letting them invite in a bit. Yeah. Pressure. You'd also be concerned about some of Luton's home results in the games that you'd expect them to win this year. Lost to Sheffield United, lost to Burnley. Yeah, I think Forest might win at Luton at the weekend. Okay. Which then you could get three differential Forest players on free hit this week.
Yeah.
Because the majority coming through have gone down the Luton path naturally because of the double this week. So someone like me is basically not looking at Forest. And yet I think they might win this weekend. And as you mentioned, the couple of fixtures afterwards are decent. Yep. So if you did go for an Elanga or a Gibbs White, you can carry it through. It's all right. It's reasonable. But I'm probably going to be overlooking them personally.
Cool. Next one up on Sunday, West Ham 2, Burnley 2. Another one, relegation battle, Burnley 2-0 up. And unfortunately for Burnley fans, last minute equaliser from Danny Ings.
Yeah, I mean, they could have ended up losing it in the end. Quite how West Ham have got themselves in this position, I'm not too sure. Brilliant goal from Fofana.
No, what a goal, yeah.
Who did they play last week? Oh, Bournemouth. I thought he was pony in that game. I thought his touch was really off. Brilliant goal that he scored. It's interesting that Cullen stayed in the team rather than Brownhill. I think Burnley, a little bit like Forest, will kind of get left out of the thinking this week. I do think there's one potentially to look at here.
Go on, who is it?
It's Fatinho.
Okay, why is that?
Well, he's playing right inside the midfield at the moment. And if you look at his position, it's high. And it was last week. We had 3 shots against Bournemouth last week. He stayed in ahead of Lorenz Asignon as the right-sided midfielder. He only had the 1 effort yesterday, and the data from yesterday doesn't look particularly good. But then you wouldn't necessarily expect it to be away to West Ham. I'm to Brentford against probably my mate Reguilón, whose concentration is absolutely abysmal. Not that his concentration matters for fantasy, but could Vitinho have some joy against Brentford? I'm not suggesting anyone buys a Burnley defender. I'm just saying, if we're sitting here going, buy 3 offensive players, maybe why not just pick one that's actually playing as basically a right-hand side forward at the moment? What price is he?
I would need
it's
to
4
check.
Point. I mean, it doesn't matter. If you're free hitting, it actually doesn't matter, does it? The prices. If you're free hitting this week, the prices of the players are irrelevant, because I think even if you pick the strongest team in terms of price, you'll have money in the bank.
I saw a patron on Planet FPL Slack said he did a free hit draft and like 12 million in the bank still. Vitinho is 4.4 million.
Yeah. I'm not suggesting anyone buys it. I think it falls into the line that could be considered for free hitters. The chances are, though, you're probably going to overlook Burnley and you'll more be looking at West Ham, and you'll be filled with joy by Kudos and Bowen blanking ahead of playing Aston Villa. But I think I'd go both of them free hit this week, Kudos and Bowen.
Yeah, I think I'll definitely be going Bowen. Kudos, I'm not too sure. It depends on where else I look, but yeah.
If you were buying and you were carrying through, do you think you'd go Madison or Bowen?
I would need to remind myself on your fixtures.
So we've got Luton at home in 30. Then we go to West Ham in 31. And then Forest at home 32. West Ham go to Newcastle in 30.
I would go Bowen, personally.
Over Madison.
Over Madison.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. Yeah. It's just the positioning, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know what you get with Villa? It's that high line. So can it be exploited? I wonder if Pakatar will be overlooked, who perhaps should be interesting. He's obviously scored yesterday. It was a really weird goal out, by the way. I don't know what Burnley are doing defensively. But he's the one who can thread the pass through, isn't he?
Did you see Kudus's run for that? I thought it was a really silly run. He was basically just...
He was so far offside.
What are you doing?
Yeah, it was absolutely miles. It's basically made Packerton's mind up not to give him the ball, because we're going, you're in front of me and I'm one-on-one. You're definitely offside, mate. And Pakatar takes it really nicely. I think he'll get overlooked. I agree. I think if I was listening, it's Bowen, Kudos, Pakatar, I think is the list, though. I think if I wanted defensively...
I was just going to ask, any defensive for you?
It's Soufal.
Yeah.
Subject to this Emerson injury. And obviously, look, the West Ham and Villa obviously both play in Europe on Thursday. But I think it's Soufal at the moment. Or the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
The goalkeeper has hauled this year in some of the more difficult games.
I've never started him in any of them. All of his... What was it?
And yet you're going to free hit and not have him, yeah?
Yes, sir. Well, I haven't stuck to that. But possibly.
Yeah, that's a pony result for West Ham. It doesn't mean that they can't beat Villa next week, but a little bit of an opportunity missed there, I think, to put a bit of daylight between them and some of the teams behind, actually, and also close the gap to Manchester United. That's now a gap. Seventh, obviously, could be enough for a Europa Conference League place. West Ham currently fill that place at the moment.
It's interesting that, because I know there's been a lot of discussion around West Ham fans, like how they're feeling and stuff. And I think if you said with 10 games to go, you'd be seventh, most would take it, no? I get there's the style beneath it and all of that, but...
Yeah, I think we've had this discussion previously a couple of weeks ago on Patreon about it's okay for West Ham fans to be happy with where they are and still want more.
Oh, yeah, of course.
that's okay. But no one's saying that, no one's saying that seventh is a bad position. But my point has been is, right, if they had a manager who did play a different brand of football, could they still be seventh? And the general consensus is, yeah, they could still be there. Yeah. So they're not... What I'm saying is, I don't think they're massive... I would say seventh right now is a small overachieve.
I would agree with that.
Because of the position of Newcastle-Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But Newcastle and Chelsea could definitely catch them. I mean, Newcastle win tonight, they go above West Ham, for example, right? So it's easily catchable, whereas winning yesterday would have put that little bit of daylight there. They obviously go to Newcastle in 30, right? Just Newcastle win tonight, West Ham flop on Sunday, and then they lose at Newcastle. And with Newcastle's running, game finished.
Yeah.
So it could quickly change where the season might look over. Big game from against Freiburg on Thursday for not just West Ham, by the way,
but for Tottenham.
But everybody competing for European places. Last one, Clates.
Yeah, big one. Liverpool 1, Man City 1. I think most people that I spoke to were predicting a draw in this. Finished 1-1.
Confession time. I only saw the second half.
So you saw Luis Diaz's chances?
We walked for miles in the rain. I'll save that one for Patreon. Trying to get back to Birmingham. No wonder they don't want to make Villa Park any bigger. Jesus Christ, getting away from that place.
I've never been to Villa Park. Really want
I do. I really like Villa Park. But getting away from it is a pain. Yeah, I only saw the second half. So a lot of what I saw was, I think City want to get out of here. I don't know if that was quite the case in the first half, but there were some big chances missed, particularly that Luis Diaz chance from near enough Salah's first touch. Was obviously surprising to see Mo not start, but this relates back to what we've said several times earlier. Like, if he's getting told, right, maximum 20, 25 minutes or something, he won't go, oh, it's Man City, I've got to play him.
Yeah.
He'll use him later in the game. I think it's a decent result for both. I think losing would have been really bad for Liverpool, and I think psychologically coming out there with not losing is decent for City because it's one where they normally face a bit of punishment as well. For City, that's the worst game. It's not to say Arsenal away is easier, but psychologically, Liverpool away, they've not won there under Pep other than one game behind closed doors.
Yep.
So they know it's their acid test, if you will, Liverpool away. So for them not to lose it, they'll take that. It's so close at the top now. It's like,
ridiculous.
I had a moment after the game where I was like, well, if Arsenal don't lose at City, it's advantage Arsenal, isn't it? And then you remember that if Liverpool beat Brighton and Liverpool obviously go back top as well. It's so close.
I think there'll be so many twists and turns. Like Tottenham have to play all three back to back to back.
Villa have still got to play all three as well.
Yep. I think a couple have to go to Old Trafford, and I know United, we say like they get papered over the cracks sometimes, but sometimes they turn up and they play really well. So I think it's too far out.
All three have got to play Brighton as well.
Exactly, and you never know what you'll get there. So I think there'll be a few twists and turns to go yet. 10 games is still a long time, but yeah, bloody hell. If you say like all three of them potentially going to end up on 85 points minimum.
It's brilliant for the league to be at this stage. I would rather that you're lot just pissed off. I'm not going to lie about
that,
it. It's interesting. 10 games to go, City are third and favourites. Yeah. But it does feel right, I think.
I think so.
But the one that's really got it in their hands now is not them. It's the other two, isn't it? Yeah. And effectively for you, if you win at City, because the goal difference now, it's almost like an extra point. There is admittedly a chance that could get drawn back
City
in, I think.
City have a nice run after this next 2-3.
Well, you'd look at things and might be worth bearing in mind for game week 31, but let's just say you won at City and Liverpool beat Brighton and then level on points, and that week Liverpool play Sheffield United.
Yeah.
I think suddenly your mentality for that sort of game starts changing. You think, right, winning here is not enough. We need to put 4 or 5 on the board here to start narrowing the gap, or even looking at it and going, well, yeah, 6s or 7s.
Yeah.
And it's a narrative that might play into Mo Salah captaincy game week 31, I think will probably be quite popular.
On that, are you looking to get him? Obviously, you're not free hitting. You're looking to wild card.
Wild card 31, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And yeah, the idea would certainly to be to do so. I don't think, at the same time, I don't think we could look at it as a certainty that he plays that game at the moment. They've got Manchester United away 3 days later. So we could sit here and go, well, they've got to get goals against Sheffield United in 31, but it's more important that they win at Manchester United in game week 32.
Sure.
And you'd imagine that they would do so, but United might have the likes of Hoyland back by then, might look Maguire maybe even stopped laughing at the back, they might be in a better position, Manchester United. And you know United will be up for it, right? Yeah. There's no doubt about that. So, yeah, it's really interesting and intriguing to see what happens at the top. I think Bradley's a really interesting one for fantasy to... Yeah, he's a really interesting one to keep an eye on. Of what I saw the game of Jarrell Cranser handled himself, I was surprised that Cranser and Bradley both played. I thought he would want to have one on that side with experience. I think Andy Robertson we can no longer look at as a guaranteed and automatic first-choice starter anymore. He's obviously played with Joe Gomez at left back and at the start of the game. Obviously, Robertson's come on later. McAllister on the pen in Salah's absence. I don't think that's a huge surprise. Nope. I think looking at the running, Trent's obviously going to have an impact on Bradley and how much he plays. Could Trent be used in midfield? I think the performances of Endo suggest probably Trent will come back in at right back when he's available. So it might be a case of overlooking Liverpool defensively, subject to Alisson's fitness. Because Keller's sitting there so cheap.
Yeah.
And he performed well again yesterday.
He did.
I think there's other things that factored John Stones' goal, which meant I wouldn't just put that full blame on him. It's very clever from Nathan Aki. It's a well-worked set piece. I think Nunes, Salah, Kelleher. It's probably the three you'd most be looking at and keeping an eye on for Liverpool at the moment for after the blank. For City, Haaland remains of interest. I know a lot of people have obviously sold him this week. I still wanted him in place for the home games in 30 and 31. That was my take. And it's not impossible that I still captain Haaland against Arsenal.
Okay.
But, excuse me, I think there'll be enough movement for the likes of Sonny that week as well. That means it's the sort of one you can take him on. Foden is going to play the majority of the games now. I think that's a better choice than De Bruyne. I don't like Alvarez on the left as they did yesterday. No. I don't think that particularly works. And we just got to a stage with Ruben Diaz where I think we began to think he's playing every game. Akanji plays as the central centre-back. Edison's injury is a concern.
Yeah.
I give him a lot of stick, but I think that could be a huge blow if he's out for, say, the season. We don't know at this stage. I'm a little concerned for them if he's out for a while. And I don't save much, but in terms of the build-up and everything, it's a level above Ortega. Be a concern that if he's going to be out. But then that said, Liverpool coped pretty well without Alisson at the moment, mainly because Keller has done quite well. And I guess if Edison was ruled out till the end of the season, I could definitely foresee, if Edison and Alisson were ruled out for the end of the season, wildcarders after the break go Ortega. Keller and Ortega, don't they?
How much is Ortega, do you know?
It's like 3.8 as well, mate.
Damn, okay, yeah. I don't see why you wouldn't.
Well, you know that you're going to have doubles and stuff.
Yeah.
So you probably would go down that route, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Five consecutive clean sheets for Areola and Dubravka, of course, at that stage. Yeah, a better result for City than Liverpool, I think, but not a bad result for either.
Yeah, agreed. Nicely done. That's a wrap. I'm just going to pull up the Twitter questions in reply to the tweet you put out. Do you want to run through the schedule for the week while I do that?
Yeah, shall do. People's Poll podcast tomorrow. I'm going to be honest, I was a bit drunk yesterday. I've not thought about topics yet, but I'll have something out on the Bird app probably by the time that you listen or watch this. Wednesday be Sky Fantasy Football. Thursday's Clash of the Correspondents is West Ham versus Aston Villa with Chris Stone and Lee Jackson. Hi, Lee. I know he's looking forward to this one. Friday, I'll be streaming Patreon podcast this week. Our Q&A today, quiz tomorrow. Tottenham on Wednesday will include a review of my trip to Villa and Arsenal's Champions League game with Porto on Tuesday night. Thursday, money in football on concession ticket pricing. It's been a kind of hot topic, particularly in North London over the last week or two. And we'll have our Game Week 29 preview podcast, The Differential Show, on Friday as well. If you want to support the show, it's www.patreon.com/planetfpl. Do it because you want to support the show or because you want the additional content.
Lovely stuff.
Or because you think Clayton's got a great FPL rank.
Happy days. Just gone through the questions. Lots of FPL questions, which I think we've covered. So, one I'm interested in, though, your opinion on, David Hunter at FPL Hunter 10. Hope you're good, mate. For those like myself who aren't free hitting in 29, is it worth considering effective ownership for transfers this week? Even if you don't think they're great options, it's a defensive move to avoid the most pain rank-wise.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We spoke about, say, Bowen versus Madison. And I think because of Bowen's positioning, we think Bowen. Step back, though. there is a lot of logic in going, say, Maddison instead because of what's after. Game week 30, Luton at home as well, appeals more than Bowen going to Newcastle. So do you get swayed there by the positioning? Do you get swayed by the EO? Probably doesn't matter with either. I'm going to guess that most people free hit and probably go Bowen this week, whereas Maddison maybe got more alternatives. But I think probably most people free hit and go Maddison as well.
Yeah.
I think Watkins' EO will be over 100.
Mm-hmm.
But it might just be a case of limiting the damage and captain Sonny. Because I think they'll probably both be, won't they? Probably both be over it.
I think so, yeah.
So, do you overlook the likes of Reguilón because there won't be a huge number of effective ownership on Brentford defenders? No, I wouldn't let it play into factoring too much. I think what I've been saying, I keep saying, it's not the how many you have, it's the who, right? And I think I listed kind of five really important. So Tony, Watkins, Son, Bowen, and I think it's probably another Tottenham, whether that's Maddison or Porro. It's probably Maddison.
Yeah, this isn't advice per se. This is just how I think about it. And I am literally like, who do I think is going to get the most points? That's it. I genuinely don't
but
think
But this week
it.
Is rough to predict.
Of course. Yeah, and that's why it's like you kind of finger in the pies, right? That's
how. Is anyone going to be hugely shocked if Fulham beat Tottenham at the weekend?
No, I don't think so.
Is anyone going to be hugely shocked if West Ham Villa's 0-0 or 3-3? Like, no. But either way.
All four of them could go.
Could Forest win at Luton? Yeah. Are everyone that certain that Brentford are going to win at Burnley? No.
Right.
No, I think it's going to be... It's not to say anyone shouldn't free here. Like, I really dislike that. You shouldn't do this. Or, like, everybody's got their own circumstance, their own way of playing. What I would say, though, is it's a difficult week. It's a difficult week. And that might mean that it's brilliant for free hitters. It might also mean that it's pretty shit. But I think, yeah, those with less than five or so should certainly be looking at it because there's enough upside and there's enough people you can look at. You're like some Madisons, Gibbs, Whites, and a lot of players there that maybe people won't go to. And so Brennan Johnson, like I said, I think Brennan Johnson is probably not one for people to buy. I think he is one for free hitters to look at, for example. You can even look at, no one's going to buy a Fulham player this week. If you think Fulham beat Tottenham at the weekend, you think, oh, well, Mooney's going to get chances and stuff. Yeah, there's every chance. Go for him if you want to. Like, I don't mind that.
Fair play. And then final one before we get out of here. Static FPL. Why minstrels?
Because that's all they had.
Oh. I thought you just had like an obsession with minstrels or something.
No, that's it. They had like a grab bag of like minstrels.
Oh.
That's literally
that was boring.
This burger place, that was all it sold. So that's
why. I saw you got a smash burger. I do love a smash burger.
Yeah, it wasn't as big as I wanted it. It was nice. It was all right. The minstrels are there for later to like get home and Harry's probably eating them.
Happy days.
Cheers, Clates.
Nice one. Any more?
No, I don't think so. Like, it's not a huge amount really to cover off in too much detail because of the blank this week. And I think there'll be plenty of time to come back and revisit on sides like Newcastle, Chelsea, Everton have got good run-ins during the international break.
Lovely stuff. Well, that's everything from us. Thanks for tuning in. Stay safe. Ciao for now.
Thanks, everyone. Play it your way and be nice to each other. Cue music, please. Manchild.
Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.